In a world of EMS podcasters, EMS Office Hours is the only live podcast bringing you the latest topics and opinions in EMS. Turn down your scanner and turn up your speakers as we join Jim Hoffman and Josh Knapp on their latest EMS podcasting journey.
Hey everybody, this is Jim Hoffman for EMS Office Hours.
Josh Knapp.
Josh, before we get going, I do want to don't forget that this episode of EMS Office Hours is sponsored by EMS Manager. Be sure to go check them out, guys, emsmanager.net, and get a free trial of this innovative and easy to use EMS employee scheduling and management software. So go check that out, guys. Josh, I think we're also we have a caller already, so we're going to try to bring them in right away. Bob, is that you?
Start the party.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Bob. Hopefully the EMS guys let me last longer this week.
I know. Last week you ran off. I thought maybe Josh said something that you didn't like, and you bailed.
Nah, he has thicker skin than that.
Mm-hmm. I do. I've developed very thick skin. Not easily offended.
Awesome. Excellent. Okay, I'll work on it today. No,
Well, I'll tell you, what did I want to mention first? I'm trying to think here. I guess we can go into the main topic.
That we were talking about before.
God, no. God, no. Maybe another time. Maybe next week. We can do that. You know.
I think we should give that a few weeks prior promo, so some people have an opinion can get online with that one.
Yeah, give some thought to that there. But I tell you this, I got this topic tonight, and we sort of touched on this topic before on the show, talking about the classroom versus the street, and I actually had. An EMT that just came out and graduated, and he said he finds it difficult to go from sitting in the class and looking at the didactic stuff and try to translate that to the field, we said this before, the patients don't read the textbook, and it ends up being...
I don't understand why that is, Jim, by the way. I feel totally, ripped off about that, that the patients don't read the textbooks, so they don't know how they're supposed to present.
Well, the problem is, and I think both of you guys can probably agree, too, that some patients do read the textbook, or at least they read WebMD, and then decide that they have something. And then they do call us, and they know all the signs and symptoms to rattle off to us when we get there.
Yep.
You do have that, at least.
Well, yellow fever is prevalent, especially this time of year.
Well, I mean, listen, I don't know. There's a reason why the content is taught the way it is in classes. There's a reason why they use all the little, acronyms and mnemonics for everything and try to help students remember and recall all the information that's kind of thrown at them in anywhere from 4 months to a year in training, maybe sometimes a little bit longer, depending upon, what type of class and how you're going about getting either EMT or paramedic education. And then these same people are sort of put into these clinical rotations where, the clinical rotations are made almost as a way to just kind of like get check boxes sort of ticked off your sheets, and so you can show it to your instructor and that, okay, I've done this many intubations, this many IVs, and I'm good for that skill, and I don't have to do that as many clinical rotations, or I can go ahead and do it, do the minimum and be done with it, but then you get out into the real world and you're sort of put with either a partner or, hopefully a field training officer, And it depends upon who you get. It's almost like, you know, you roll the dice on the type of person you're going to get that's going to sort of teach you the ropes.
You know, I think I'm going to let Bob comment on this because he's really the active instructor right now. I mean, I certainly, it almost seems like we're rehashing a little bit of what we talked about in the past, Jim.
Well, I think we are, and I think, but I think it's worth sort of maybe giving a little, I mean, I like to try to give a little bit of insight to new people, new students, or even new listeners or people that are just coming out of class tonight on,
tis the season, right?
Some sort of things they can do to get a handle on the differences between the two, you know. What do you think, Bob? You want to ring in a little bit? So before I say the EMS gods are kind to you right now, we can your opinion in there.
First of all, I wish I had time to do more teaching than I do now, so I'm not as active as an instructor as I used to be. But you look at the clinical time for EMT classes. I mean, I did 8 hours of hospital observation, which is what they called it. And so we just kind of stood around and observed. And we didn't really spend any time talking. The only interaction we had with patients was our classmates in the lab scenarios. So what do we expect? I mean, that's a big jump to now you're by yourself. You could be an EMT with a driver-only partner, you know, in someone's house with a real-life patient. And we don't require any teaching or we don't require any experience, you know, in school to talk with and interact with live patients. You know, I like the idea of doing clinical time in nursing homes. You spend 4 hours, you know, you have your manual blood pressure cuff and your stethoscope, and you just go around and check everybody's blood pressure, listen to their lung sounds, and take a history from them.
Right.
And that gives you, there's no stress, you know, it gives you experience because that's, you know, where a lot of your patients you're going to encounter there. That sort of gives you appreciation for, you know, how to talk to people.
Yeah. Josh, do you remember how many clinicals you went through as an EMT?
As an EMT? I mean, you know, and I think that Bob hit that one on right on the head. It's like you got to look on how many hours that you're devoting to the total component of education. I mean, for an EMT, you know, what's the minimum hours in New York State? 120? Most programs now do maybe 140 hours.
It's gone to 140.
I mean, what's that? That's 3 weeks, you know, a couple of months part-time at night. I mean, that's like, it's nothing. I mean, you know, not to minimize what they have to learn compared to medics, but when you're fresh into it, brand new, you feel like you're being fed by a fire hose either way you approach it. I mean, you know, we're talking about EMTs, so you're brand new into it. You're learning this first aid, this first response stuff for the first time, and you're given a book with 300 some odd pages and expected to know it for a test that's looming almost at the same time that you start the program.
That's true. I mean, think about it. You've got, what, 4 months, 5 months of training as an EMT. You have all this content to sort of absorb, and pretty much you're expected to start, you know, retaining this content and knowing it and understanding it almost right away.
And applying it.
And like right. Bob said, you don't – as an EMT – I'm not the best EMT, but this is how we all start out. You know, we start out at the basic level. You don't just go right into, you know, paramedic class just yet. But as an EMT, you're not getting a lot of clinical experience. And then what happens? I mean, a lot of times, for a lot of places, they don't even really have FTO-type training for EMT level. They kind of save that for the medics. The EMTs get an in-servicing. They do maybe a couple of ride-alongs. And then they're, like Bob said, they're stuck with, you know, they get put with a medic or maybe even another driver, depending upon the system and where they work.
Depending on the pressure in the system, you could be
right.
Just shoved in the seat with another driver.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
And not even when I say another driver, a driver, somebody who's just an MVO.
Right.
Yeah, no, it was, you know, hey, aren't we all, we're all ambulance drivers. I went to the correspondence course of ACE Ambulance Driving School, so I know what I'm doing now.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, listen, it kind of sucks for the EMT to get kind of thrown in that position, and then it sucks for the medic that now is almost like OJTing, you know, on the job training this new individual and trying to show them the ropes and how to work with a medic. Because, I mean, listen, how many times and even in EMT school, they don't really focus on how to work with a paramedic, right? They're not focusing on that end of the training either. And most systems work one medic, one EMT, you know, for the most part. But they focus on just sort of the, you know, the first aid end of it and the paramedic, the EMT level of skills and understanding without even tossing in the fact that, well, you know what, most of you guys, if you go out there and you work, you're going to end up working with a paramedic.
Yeah, you got to do interfacility.
Go ahead.
They don't teach about interfacility transfers either. I mean, I didn't know. My first patient was a routine dialysis transfer. I didn't know that you couldn't take a blood pressure over a shunt. I didn't know what a shunt was. I had no idea what dialysis was for, you know, my first day. They didn't prepare me for that.
That's not one of the, you know, that may be a paragraph in a chapter a paragraph in a section in a chapter on medical emergencies. So you get the medical emergencies, you get, diabetes, and then they go down and they give a paragraph to each one. And the stuff that you can deal with, like hypoglycemia, which really, you know, if you think about it, is a AHA first aid course topic as well. You know, give somebody sugar, et cetera, and that's about all they go into it. They don't
That was my very first call as an EMT with a hypoglycemic patient. I was terrified.
How unusual that is, too, because it's like probably one of our most common calls.
And this isn't bashing EMTs at all.
No. I think
the education, you know, we say like, okay, well, the text patients don't read the textbook, and how do you apply the book knowledge to the field? You know, that's a failure of not the student, I think, as much as our education system, where why don't we write textbooks that prepare graduates to be competent when they get out, and why don't we require clinical time and hours and, you know, and like our reading, I know we've talked about BLS medications, and I think the last time I was on, we talked about BLS 12 leads, and I know Peter Koenig has a post about expanded BLS medications, and I'm just like, how much stuff can you cram into, you know, a few hour in service, and what is the depth of knowledge that we should require people to know about the medications that they're carrying, or the, you know,
yeah, when to give it, when not to give them.
And, I think the answer to that, Bob, is that EMS has two monkeys on its back. You know, one is this is how we've always done it. And the other is we just need the minimum qualifications. So there's an aspect of we want to put an ass in the seat as cheaply as possible. Don't rock the apple cart. Don't change anything. Let's just get them in. The guys before it were able to do it, so the guys after. Somewhere you'll learn. And really, truly, we come back down to community education, because who's the people on the short end of the stick here? You know, unless things go really, really south, and I mean really south, pretty much only the patient. You know, the practitioner, let's say you get a dialysis patient who isn't quite gotten all their fluid off or something, or is showing some cardiac symptoms, and you got a new, brand new, fresh, card is wet EMT with an MVO. They're not supposed to be there. Technically, they're supposed to recognize all the signs and symptoms. But if you think about all the thousands of things that you're trying to assimilate, keep your eye on, and keep fresh in your head about all the extraneous information that it takes to take a patient and move them from one place to another, okay, between body position, cots, position of comfort, you know, blood pressures, all of those other things going on, they may not be, you know, their sixth sense might not be tuned yet to recognize those cardiac symptoms that are going on. If you have a half-hour transport or an hour transport or a three-hour transport, those symptoms can develop into, you know, a full-on arrest. Now what are you supposed to do?
And then the other end of the spectrum, for a project, I recently read the cardiac chapter of the latest version of an EMT book. And under the cardiac section, it basically says everything. You should suspect a cardiac cause of everything, you know, sweating, you know, dizziness. And it says you shouldn't leave the patient alone to get the stretcher, which is, you know, really impossible when you have two people. You know, somebody, a lot of situations, you're going to have to leave the patient alone to go out and get the stretcher to bring them back, the truck. And, you know, if you followed that, you would assume that everyone's having a heart attack. And then there's really no BLS calls. You know, if you're assuming that every patient with these vague symptoms has a heart attack.
Yeah, it's almost like you're overcompensating. You know, it's like, okay, you know what? We missed a few in the last one because we didn't stress these symptoms. Now everybody that's coming in. And, you know, it's kind of funny because I love to teach the aspect of shock. You know, and then go into the idea of, well, what's shock? And shock is, you know, essentially your body trying to respond to the inability to properly perfuse itself. And then you start, you know, and it's really great when you talk to somebody who's engaged and they're learning this stuff for the first time and they turn around and you go, yeah, well, you know, we can have anaphylaxis, we can have cardiac related, we can have neuro, we can have trauma, we can have and even emotional. And they go, wait, and that all presents the same way? And you go, pretty much. And then their head explodes. You know, it's like, how are we supposed to keep track of everything going on here? Sorry to shut the line down. Hello?
No, I'm just, I was looking at a post that Tom posted in the chat room now about the King County. I think Tim Noonan mentioned that a few weeks ago. We had sort of talked a little bit about this, and he talked about how they require a very long and intensive program for new paramedics to come into their service, you know. And I wonder, why is it that that's not sort of a standard, you know, nationwide? It's you know, Nathan mentioned the issue with, you know, the money and funding, and this is why, you know, it's more that thing we talked about before on the show, too. It's putting the butts in the seat, and that's what a lot of agencies are more concerned with, is getting that warm body in the seat so that they don't run trucks down. They can say they have a high in-service time, but then in the end, like you mentioned, Josh, it's like, who gets the short end of the stick? It's the patients inevitably get the short end of it, but at the same time, the provider is not getting enough education to make them feel, you know, comfortable and confident when they're encountering these patients. I mean, listen, anyone that's been out in the field, you know that it's a constant learning process. There's no point where we stop learning, where we just put everything up and, okay, I know everything. I can deal with any call that comes at me. There's always those calls and always those situations that we end up sort of getting in where you don't really expect what gets thrown at you. Like we mentioned earlier, that the patients don't read the textbook. The calls we get aren't always, you know, textbook, you know, sort of adhere to the textbook version of it. So just think about these new people that come out or people that don't have a lot of, you know, field experience, and they're just kind of thrown out there, you know, and expected to know everything that they're supposed to do. And when they don't, what happens? That's when we start eating our young, right? That's when we start bad-mouthing them. This guy doesn't know what he's doing. He's a horrible EMT. He's a sucky medic, you know. And then, the person either, what, sinks or swims or ends up getting another job or just keeps trucking along, you know, mediocre and just sort of, you know, skating by.
And we've covered that too. You know, there's a negative effect of eating our young. It really doesn't build us up. You know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. In some cases, but, you know, when we start really picking on some of the individuals who, especially when they're just new, when you're brand new and you're just trying to figure it out, just because somebody might not, you know, think you're the greatest personality or anything else, but you may be technically proficient, but you're not even given the opportunity, you know, that detracts from the entire organization.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we always have to be conscious of, because there is, you know, there is within medicine the adage of see one, do one, teach one. And somewhere within EMS, we've broken down to learn it on your own.
And when you say, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, we are killing people. I mean, people leave the field. And so, yeah. I mean, that's the same as they may as well be to us. They may go to nursing school or, you know, do something non-medical related that, you know, we're losing people that could have been good caregivers. They just weren't taught how initially and weren't mentored the right way when they started working.
Absolutely.
Just compare,
go ahead.
I mean, you compare us, our education, to a police academy, and I don't like the, you know, in-your-face push-ups, sit-ups, you know, those kinds of things. But we for a while, a service I was with did Con Ed at a police academy and in the same building, and they would have academy classes going on, and they're always on. You know, I was just really impressed how they stressed situational awareness. You know, they would eat lunch, they would have the radio on, so they would listen to how to, you know, you'd know how to talk on the radio, and at the time they did 10 codes, so then they would taught them the 10 codes. The 10 codes were also up in the bathroom above the urinals, so you could, you know, it was like an extra reminder, and they just drill in, you know, how to talk to people, the verbal de-escalation, how to manage scenes, and you get some people out of the police academy that, you know, aren't good at those things, and a lot of people get weeded out in the academy. But it's just so much different. We're just expected to walk into these scenes and take control, and we get no training at all in school for that. And we a lot of ways, we take pride in the fact that we don't get this training and that we have to learn it on our own. And all that experience we get, you know, there's victims of... in the wake of that experience.
And that's part of the communication to the community, to say, you know, look, you know, you can pay for our training one way or another, but any way you shake it, the training gets paid for. And when you talk about, you know, these like the police organizations especially, that's why you get that paramilitary label, because they do sort of parallel a lot of military aspects, including rank, command, and training. And, you know, there is that background to say, look, these guys are in dangerous jobs, so if you don't train them, you're just asking for a hurt or injured or killed police officer. Well, you know what? Got news for you. I mean, is there an inequality on what we're worth in the field as EMS? I mean, that's a really bad question, but I'll bet you, you know, what the majority of answers will be.
You know, Nathan mentions in the chat room, he thinks that, you know, a lot of people in this field are sort of the looking to just do the minimum, you know, type of mentality. I don't know if I agree with that 100%. I'm sure there are people.
I'm not sure I agree with that either, Nathan.
I mean, I think there are. I think he's right. There are people, and I think more than likely, Nathan's making that statement as well because of what he's experienced. Because a lot of us do sort of have that experience, right? We get sort of encounter those people who don't do things like come on a podcast and engage in a conversation or visit EMS blogs or go to conferences or take more continuing education than what they need to. So, you know, when you experience a lot of people that do that, then you end up, you know, having sort of this impression that a lot of us, you get that generalization, right, that most of us don't want to do anything extra. You know, a lot of people, well, if I'm not getting paid to go to that seat, that continuing education, I'm not going. It's right. My card's the same as the other guy's getting all the education.
Well,
your card's the same, but the care you're giving is not the same.
Well, and that comes from the attitude of, I can make more money if I work a second job doing this. Or if you're in a system that offers it, I can work some overtime. And, you know, I remember when I came into this field, Jim, overtime was the de facto standard. I mean, there were some guys who were working crazy-ass hours and were getting almost double their standard yearly pay. And, you know, they were buying houses from it. They were putting their kids in school. I mean, I'm not saying that that type of money is not a bad thing, but the way that they were getting it is, in the end, detrimental to both us as a group and to the community, because in reality, if there's a real community – and I used to say this also, and I've mentioned this in other podcasts. If you have a guy that's working three jobs – as far as the community thinks, they have three EMTs or paramedics or EMS in those three slots. So when they go and count it up, you know, they're counting one guy three times. And when the shit hits the fan, they're going to be sorely short.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the same with, like, volunteers who work at your full-time job. When there's a disaster, you're going to get called into work. And if the communities that have the rely on volunteers, if a lot of their members work full time somewhere, they're going to be short. There's going to be no one left.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, because everybody's double dipping. You get everybody doing different. Like you said, they volunteer one place, they work paid someplace else, and when the chips fall, they go with the paid end of it, and then the volunteers who are expected to be a resource for the community end up not being able to do as much as they would like because all of their members are paid someplace else and are doing it, you know.
And where does that all boil down to again? What are we again talking about? This attitude of warm ass in a seat. Well, I'll answer it for you, Jim.
Okay.
It's the attitude of a warm ass in a seat, and that's what we want because that's all they know. You know, I have time and time again, you know, had conversations with people who don't really understand EMS and think either the job's not that dangerous or there's not that much to it. He's like, you know, I once had a guy, he said, what the hell? You throw some meat in the back of a wagon, you drive it to a hospital. What's so hard about that? You know, and so you just have to stop and pause and say, where's the disconnect here?
Yeah, the thing is, too, like, you know, Nathan mentions in here, and this is something we talked about too, what happens? The people that give a shit, that go to all these, additional training and everything, eventually get frustrated seeing the other people getting paid the same money they're getting paid, not doing the extra training, not taking the next step, and end up leaving, going to be nurses, doctors, PAs, airline attendants, you know, computer specialists, whatever the case may be, you know. And even, you know, John says too, you know, that there's sort of like a stigma of those of us that look to take it to another level on an individual basis, where you're going to the conferences, you're taking the extra continuing education classes, you know what I mean? Now you look at, you're the whacker, you know, you're the whacker, you're reading too much, you got too much nice to know stuff.
And that's where we eat our young.
Right.
And that's where we turn on ourselves. And you know what? Eat our young, whatever. So you have a guy who's been in the job 5 years, 10 years, and is enthusiastic about it. Oh, no, you can't be enthusiastic about this, man. You got to be burnt to this.
You got to be burnt, right.
You're right. And then, of course, it's the brand new guy who's sort of ostracized because he's brand new. So what does he do? He cops the burnt attitude. And it's like we got to walk away from this burnt attitude and sort of come into the idea of this professionalism, but what comes first? Do we act the professional and then get paid that way, or do you pay us and educate us and then we act professionally?
Yeah. I mean, listen, yeah, Bob.
Just through various, like, Twitter and retweets, I've followed a lot of people from Canada, and a lot of Canada has a lot of very organized EMS advocacy agencies. And when something like, you know, a fire department is threatening to take over a separate EMS system. They have a very professionally designed website with talking points about why that's they don't think that that's a good idea and why single-role EMS providers provide, you know, better service. And I'm not saying, I'm not taking a position on that, you know, I'm not saying that one is better than the other, but we don't really have that here. I mean, they're just so much more organized than we are. In Ontario, you know, there's the Ontario Paramedic Association, and they're promoting self-regulation, whereas, you know, most communities and services in the U.S. are overseen by physicians. You know, this is a group of paramedics that are going to be in charge of designing protocols with some, you know, looser guidance from a physician. And they already do that in Europe, and like the U.K. and Australia is moving to that too. And we aren't even, you know, we're so far behind, you know, those kinds of conversations. And there has to be a way to get the people who do go to conferences and want to learn more and stay active and research and read blogs and comment on blogs to get organized and get a loud enough voice to say, okay, this is what quality care is. If you say that you're a good system, you know, even if you get there in 8 minutes, 90% of the time, if you don't do these things after you arrive, and if these aren't the outcomes of the patients that you treat, then you are not good. And the community, the next community over, the services there is. And how do we get to, you know, become a good system? And it comes from being organized. Like, nurses are very organized. The firefighters are, you know, incredibly well organized. And same with the cops. And we just haven't been able to
get enough people together. And they're working with the same budgets. You know, they have budget constraints just like we do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but they have some organization, and you know, and you'll get people talking now. Oh, well, EMS is still young. You know, it's still a young profession.
Like, that's, you know, goddamn. That's
it's
bullshit.
Just a constant excuse
is that
why we're yeah. Right. It's just a constant excuse as to why we're not moving forward or whatever. You know, why we have issues like we're talking about tonight with people not being prepared. And, you know, and being having this challenge of knowing the textbook, passing their exams, getting their, you know, passing the skill exams, and then going out in the field and saying, what in the hell is going on here? I don't know. I feel like I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Unless it's classic, you know, step-by-step chest pain where, you know, it's cool pill diaphoretic and they've got, you know, Levine sign and all this other good stuff. And you can say, oh, that's a chest pain. I know exactly what to do with that, you know. Where a lot of chest pain, like you mentioned, Bob, earlier, you know, it's like you get called for a lot of chest pains and they're not really cardiac related. And you got to sit there for a few minutes and kind of play Columbo and figure out, is this, you know, cardiac chest pain? Is it pleuritic chest pain? Or what the case is, you know? And I guess a lot of that comes with experience. But at the same time, there should be some sort of preparation, especially with the amount of calls you get that are like that.
And it's not just experience. You have to have people that are willing to learn from it. You know, there's another, like, disease we have where people are, you know, afraid to make a, admit that they may have made a mistake or they didn't ask all the right questions, and they get really defensive when, you know, like maybe a nurse asks, well, why didn't you do this? And, you know, it's not a reason to get defensive. It's just, you know,
well,
afterwards, ask yourself.
The defensive is a natural reaction, Bob, I think, because we work – again, what are the pressures that come down when you are but a cog in a wheel or a warm ass in a seat and not an individual with a valuable set of skills? When you are not valued as an individual resource instead of looked at as a component, then there is a lot less of the building of your resource. There's a lot less sort of promotion, and when I mean promotion, I mean praise of skill sets, and we tend to instead rely on a more punitive system. So did you not get the patient care report correctly? Did the patient outcome not, you know, was there something wrong? It's all along the lines, these little things that you can be reported for, but there doesn't seem to be that, and that's the negative feedback loop, but, you know, there doesn't seem to be that positive feedback loop. And I think the reason is because as a resource, we're not really protected or valued as an individual resource. Hate to be so negative on that.
Yeah, I wrote a paper for this class I'm taking, or just finished, about the Kansas City Fire Department merger with Mass, their public utility model ambulance service. And I didn't realize when I did the research how I knew that the fire service was organized, but they have political action committees, just tons of money that they donate, you know, make campaign contributions for local and national elections. And you would never doubt the value of the fire service. And a lot of, like, people that promote EMS-only systems say that they're evil and that they're, you know, they're not being honest. I don't think that. I just want the people who are interested in doing EMS to get some of that and communicate how valuable we are and what we do and why we're more than ambulance drivers. And we just don't have that yet. And I think one of the reasons to start is to increase the minimum education standards and to make you teach ambulance driving in EMT class and teach you how to talk to people and require some more clinical time and make it harder to get in, reduce, you know, and part of it's the supply and demand. If we have a smaller number of more qualified people out there, I think that the people that care about the profession, it's, you know, there won't be this, you know, the lowest common denominator. There won't be as many of those people that drag the rest of us down.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. I think it was Nathan mentioned it in the chat as well about, you know, my thought process. I just had a brain cramp because I'm looking at three different things at once here. But Nathan,
right.
I mentioned
we have an active chat room this year.
I know.
Great.
I don't want anybody getting, you know, sort of, you know, looked over here. But let me see if I can find that. And then find Nathan's comment. Talk amongst yourselves. Oh, because agencies, as far as increasing education, you know, Nathan made a good point, because agencies, when you do that, they start to complain because it's going to cost them money and time and maybe even having to add personnel to do things like have an active field, you know, training program in place. You got to have people that are going to, you're going to pretty much pay somebody to work for you as a third and riding as a third person for X amount of time until they meet the requirements and are satisfied to go out there on their own on the ambulance. So as soon as you start talking about increasing education, increasing, you know, training, then agencies start to panic because now they're seeing, you know, again, the empty seats. They're not seeing as many ambulances on the road, you know, and they start to panic and look for ways to sort of justify keeping, you know, the status quo, keeping things.
Well, it's a double-edged sword because when we speak, they get sharp on both sides, right?
Yeah.
When we as EMS providers really sort of, and then we're the only ones who are being vocal about our position. And, you know, there's an old saying, you know, it's very difficult to be your own advocate. PR rep. You know, it's hard to, you know, toot your own horn because if people look at you and say, oh, well, of course you're going to say that. And so it's hard for EMS to say, hey, we add value to the system. We give value back to the community. We add, you know, until somebody goes and does a study that says, you know, with an active EMS system, you have this amount of community lives saved, which in the end saves this amount of money to the community, because when you have a death in the community, this is why we have highway laws. When you have a death, it not only is the cost of that accident or maybe the hospital, but it's the loss of that individual contributing to society. And it's not, you know, to get all crazy about how far down the line that goes, but this is the reason why we're trying to improve cardiac outcomes. Not because, you know, a poor cardiac outcome, if you have a save and the guy's going to be in the ICU for 15 weeks, that's a lot of money for the hospital. But somehow they want the save to be, you come in, you go to a stent, and you're back out of the hospital in 3 days. That actually creates more money to the community than does the guy who's stuck in the hospital for 15 weeks and may never get out and may never contribute, you know, to his job, to his family again, or hers. So it's a complex issue, but you sort of got to follow the money. And until that, you know, that statement, that demand for research that says we need to prove this is done, you're only going to have us shouting against the people who have to pay the bills, and they're going to be constrained because they're not getting more money to pay the bills, so they want to keep the bills low.
Right. Well, listen, guys, anyone out there listening, I know we have a lot of people in the chat room. If anybody wants to call in, you can call in toll-free and join the conversation if you want. It's 877-217-3924. If you're going to call in, go ahead and do that. I'll probably see you up in the queue, and I'll bring you into the live conversation. I do want to take a couple of minutes, guys, if you don't mind, and just mention our sponsor, EMS Manager. You know, they have some really cool software for EMS scheduling and management. And I think they really make it easy to set up. They make it really easy to maintain, easy to manage, guys. You can actually use their mobile web app. You can get it through your smartphone, any other mobile device. And as long as you have an internet connection, you can get it and look at it. And you can, your managers and staff can actually go ahead and oversee and manage and make requests or changes to the schedules from anywhere, as long as you have a internet connection. You know, pricing for that, this, guys, too, if you're listening, you like work for, you're in a small volley agency, something like that, you know, the pricing for EMS Manager, if you do decide to do something like this, it's based on the size of the organization. So it's always affordable. And since, again, it's web-based, your employee scheduling and software is always in the cloud. So that means there's no additional cost IT-wise that you have to worry about. And I know I mentioned this before in previous weeks or two, guys. The training at EMS Manager is free. The tech support's free. The all system software updates are all free. So go check them out. You can get a free customized trial there. It's a 14-day trial at EMS Manager. It's emsmanager.net. You know, I thank them for sponsoring us here at EMS Office Hours, as well as a lot of the other podcasts within the ProMed Network. So they're proud to sponsor us through this sponsorship, and they really support everything that we do here. So go check them out, guys. Show your support for them. Tell them EMS Office Hours sent you. Get a free customized trial, like I said. It's about 14 days you can get this trial for. It really is an amazing employee scheduling management tool. It's emsmanager.net. The link is in the show notes, guys. Go check it out if you haven't checked it out yet. Let them know we sent you over there, and show your support for them, since they're sort of supporting us in EMS and everything we do here as well. So, and again, guys, anyone want to call in toll-free, be sure to do that. It's 877-217-3924. We got about another 10 minutes or so of show left, so feel free to pop in. Oh, and John mentioned about EMS Manager as well. They're going to be at EMS today at booth 1050. So go check them out. If you're going to be at the conference, go check that out. Visit them at the booth. And don't forget to tell them that EMS Office I was setting you.
I knew you were trying to make it down to EMS World, Jim.
No.
You know, are you thinking of EMS today at all?
What?
Are you thinking of trying to get down there?
No, I'm not going to be able to.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'd love to have a booth down there, but, and I have, you know.
We got to get an EMS Office Hours booth down there, where we got to
do. Yeah, right. You know, I mean, well, I'll be happy to share a Want New booth with an EMS Office Hours booth, but get the frickin' booth.
What the hell is Want New?
Oh, Oh, that just
you're talking about.
That now you're hurting me. Now last week you were like singing the praises. This week you're like, what the hell is the best oxygen wrench ever made? That's okay. Fine.
Exactly.
I did see an EMT. There is an EMT that I works with one of the services we respond with that has one.
Wow.
So putting the word out. She had it hanging on her keychain too. That's the only reason other people have them. They just they sort of conceal them, I think.
Yeah.
But I pointed out, I saw it on our keychain. I said, I know that is a want new oxygen wrench. That is the best oxygen wrench that you can buy now.
Thanks, Bob. I'm wondering, do you think?
And she opened it very quickly. It was lightning fast that she had the bottle open when using it.
You know what? Because when you have one, you actually want to give oxygen. But I'm just thinking. Is that could that be a campaign I could run? Is, you know, the want new oxygen wrench the only wrench you want to steal? Because the number one complaint is people swipe their keys.
She had a purple one. Yeah, I think she wouldn't have been able to get home. I don't think if someone swiped the wrench. So she was holding out to that tight.
Well, I don't want to. The show here, but you know,
yeah, that doesn't take away for a want new 15 minutes of want new talk.
Yeah, I will say, mentioning,
just never mind. Go ahead, what Bob?
I am headed to, I will not be at EMS today, but I'm going to EMS on the Hill. So, the big thing, you know, you're talking about getting our message out. One way to do that is, our top legislative agenda, our top legislative priority is the EMS field bill, which takes it, you know, they want universal response times and research and doing all the things so, you know, one community's EMS system can be compared to another community's. And this is really big. This is a chance to get us recognized on the federal level and get some more money. So I just encourage everybody to take a look at it. Go to NAEMT's website. They make it really easy.
When you're down there and if you actually get, you know, in line to speak to somebody with some weight and importance behind them, the question I think should be is, where are our lobbyists? You know, especially if
you get to speak to some
of the guys at the NEMT. Well, you know, the flight medics, who are some of the worst paid medics in the country, have a lobbyist. And they've created a bunch of rules that have made the, you know, haven't made it that much safer, but are definitely working in that direction.
I'm sorry, guys. I just dropped this bomb, and now I'm getting a call.
Great.
That's my little plug. Just look at it, see what you think about it, and you know, email your representatives, because this is a big step for us right now, and it's not perfect.
Sure.
No legislation is, but it's something that as a profession we need right now. So,
yeah.
All right, have a good night, guys.
Email.
Thank you.
All right, Bob.
Stay safe.
Okay.
Bye. I was going to ask him to email you the link so you can put it up, but you can probably find it, Jim.
Yeah.
Cool.
We're going to have to. We should have told Bob. He could have stayed on with us while he drove to the call, so they heard the sirens in the background.
Well, that would just give it.
It's been the Chicago Fire.
Yeah, well, you know, that's authenticity because, you know, everybody who really knows this show that knows that, you know, you're actually a school teacher in Vermont and, you know, I'm a auto mechanic down in West Virginia.
Yeah.
And we beat up this idea that we're New York City or New York paramedics just for fun.
Right.
It's something
to
talk about.
You know what, Josh? We only have about maybe 10 more minutes, but we have another call. I want to bring him in. Let them chime in. Hello.
Hello.
Hey, John.
How you doing, Jim? It's John.
Hey, John.
I'm starting to recognize your phone number, too.
what was just mentioned actually came over a couple things I went over last night, and I pulled my show notes out. The first one being the field bill, which is House H.R. 809, and what the talking points that I have here is it's going to implement some key recommendations about putting HHS as the primary federal agency covering us, along with more federal support at evaluation, testing, new delivery, and payment models, and fulfilling the public expectations. Those are the four big things that that bill would address.
Hmm.
Now, what do they want to do with that, John?
What do they want to do
with
that?
I mean, is this going to be, they're going to work this into some sort of bill, or is this, they're going to try to make, I mean, what's the end run on this?
This is actually a bill that is in the House right now.
And how much support do they say it has? I mean, because I've heard of other bills and they've just like, they just fall by the wayside. And especially now with, you know, the sequester going on, who's going to vote for anything that's going to cost money?
Well, Don didn't say when I had him on last night, Don Lundy, but it does say this legislation does not add to the federal deficit. The new programs would actually be funded by voluntary contributions on your 1040. When you file your taxes in January, you'd be like, do you want to donate for this?
Oh, all we need is a campaign that runs parallel to that is, do you want an ambulance to actually find your house?
Basically.
Just around, you know, April 15th or a couple of weeks before, you know, when everybody's scrambling and sweating out those last details on their tax and they see that little check mark, you know, get something in the forefront of their mind.
And as far as getting some kind of, get a bunch of congressmen together, the association is also has what's called the EMS caucus that you could try to talk your elected official into joining. So it'd be members of Congress and the Senate. They will actually not be trained, but they will become quickly familiarized with what we do in the field. And
I guess it's definitely steps that need to be taken. I mean, it's definitely stuff that, getting us out there more.
Yeah, because this caucus is supposed to help promote and educate and bring awareness up among the decision makers and basically all the policy issues affecting us.
Yeah.
But now the state, are states, you think, going to be, you know, have to adopt these things? Because that ends up being the problem, you know, is that you have the individual states. That's the problem now, is individual states and counties and even all the way down to just little bitty, regional issues where they don't want to get on board with things that are of a national sort of drive, everything from, you know, changes in ACLS to, STEMI stuff to, just the equipment that we're using. You know, you got to fight tooth and nail just to kind of get that stuff implemented.
Yeah.
And that's just on a little bit local sort of levels, you know.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's not to beat it to death, but it's a long path from, you know, getting a bill to actually seeing the standards get raised in the community. And I think part of it, you know, is like what Jim said, you know, where are you going to get the states to adopt it? It's got to be, you know, from that federal level, it's got to come down to the states that are even in agreement with, you know, federal direction. And I think one of the big problems, and again, the force that has to be driven is that seat in the Department of Homeland Security or that office in the Department of Homeland Security for EMS needs to be filled so we can start getting some central federalized standards and directions. I don't think this bill is the ticket. Sorry.
Well, they'd also be talking about taking EMS and making them part of HHS, Health and Human Services, not Homeland Security. Because we're medical personnel.
Yeah. I would be happy in any centralized direction, and then they could argue about what office later. I sort of think DHS only because there's more of a name recognition to it and probably more drive and just a sexier reason for funding. I mean, if you want to, you know, drill it down to that level. But, you know, HHS is cool as well.
Yep, and in fact, like Nathan just said, point the way, and he'll back it. I'm the same way. I'll back this 100%.
I think that's part of Nathan makes a good point, which I think it ends up being where when you've got these sort of things coming through, and we actually had a show just with New Jersey and how they were – they had a bill in New Jersey, and they were putting things through to make changes and all, and how they were having so much, pushback on it from the volunteers and from ambulance agencies and things, that it's the type of thing that instead of getting behind something that is going to make a lot of good changes, you know, people sort of try to be overly skeptical. They don't get behind it, and then nothing gets done. You know, or whatever, what ends up happening, it's so weak that it doesn't really make that much of a of an impact, you know. And I wonder sometimes, that's a whole other thing too. I mean, we what is it, Josh? I think we looked into this once before. What is it, about 1 million EMTs and paramedics in the nation?
Yeah, about 1 million registered first responders at any one point in the country, and that includes fire medics and volunteers. Which is kind of crazy because it shows the fall off is pretty much either the same or matches how many new. Because, you know, right after 9/11, there was a whole bunch of community activism and volunteerism, both in fire and EMS. And, you know, why aren't those numbers reflected now in the nation?
Hmm. You know, I just often wonder sometimes, when you think of numbers that big, how if we had everyone that, you know, of that 1 million people, everybody gave $1 to something like, breast cancer or something like that, and it came out that that was an EMS sort of donation, $1 million given, how many eyes we might raise and how much public attention we might get from something like that, you know?
Well, and that sort of, you know, is... And Nathan, I'm right with you, man, because I feel that we're the first ones in our own ways, in our own way, in our own path, is that in the way of our own path. I can say that right, Jim. Is that when we have when we sort of want to get behind something, there are too many people that say, no, I have a better way. And we're so fractured across the country that we can't seem to get, you know, that would be great, Jim, if we could get 1 million people who identify themselves as EMS for any one cause. I mean,
right.
Think of how
one buck.
Forget about the money. What if we just got behind it and said, you know, as a letter, you know, and you can do that, you know, within a website now, 1 million EMSers send a letter to Washington saying, listen, we think that we need better standards.
Yeah.
You know, but there's
I think we go back. I think we go back, though, Josh, to what we mentioned earlier on in the show, was that you're going to get the same people that are, you know, listening to podcasts and reading the blogs and taking the extra education. Those are going to be the people that are going to be signing that letter and voicing their opinions. And, you know, you're not getting the rest of the people out there, you know, engaged enough. And I guess it maybe comes down to how do we get these people that we talk a little bit about, sort of maybe badmouth a little bit tonight in the show, talking about just doing the bare minimum. How do we turn them around?
That's right. You people who sit on your ass and
engaged. Yeah, I mean, how do we get them engaged in this process, and make the voice that we have even bigger, you know, than what it is, and make it, you know, big enough to sort of really turn some heads. I mean, listen, guys, we went off the rails a little bit tonight on the show, and you know, varied away from what the main topic was. But you know, that's the beauty of the show, is that we don't lock ourselves into any one topic. You know, we did, you know, pretty much stay on it for at least, I'm going to say at least 20 minutes before we lost control. But, you know, what? It's the beauty of the show is the fact that we go by what people in the chat room are talking about.
Going.
Yeah. I mean, we talk about what people in the chat room want to talk about as well, and go by their comments. And that's why it's called Office Hours, where everybody can get in here and have a voice, and we can sort of talk about what they're talking about as well. So why don't we end it there, guys? John, thanks for popping in. I appreciate it. Thanks for your comments in the chat room. Don't forget to go check out your show over in Block Talk Radio as well at
Saturday night at an ungodly hour, but if you're there, go in. It's interesting.
Yes. Yes. Over at right, exactly. So go check out John. He's at One Union 801, the webcast on Blog Talk Radio. I want to say thanks to Joe Pukowski in the chat as well. Joe joins us on a regular basis. Joe, thanks for popping in. Nathan, thank you for your comments as well. I appreciate your feedback and your commentary. Tom, I don't know if you stopped to go get a beer or not, but if you're still with us, Tom, thank you for popping in and giving some comments as well. You can go get Tom Boothley. You can go check out his blog at ems12leads.com. And actually, that's one of those type of blogs where you can go and get a lot more about a specific topic in EMS than you're going to get in your basic paramedic class. So that's exactly the type of thing that we talk about, you know, tonight, about getting that extra sort of, you know, training and extra guidance when it comes to something that's key to what we do here. So go check
yeah,
that.
It's a little bit misleading in the title because it's a lot more than just 12 leads.
Yeah, yeah. So go check out Tom's blog at EMS12leads.com. I'll put all these links, everybody, in the show notes here. It'll be on the blog at EMS12leads.com on Wednesday morning. So you can go check out all of the links that I'm mentioning here, guys. So, again, thanks, everyone, for joining me. I really appreciate it. Just a quick shout-out to some of my new Twitter followers. I love saying the Twitter followers, and I got a few new ones this week. We got Russ Bach, Kelly Grafman, Midway Ambulance Case, Foxfire, Troy Schaefer. Well, I know Troy for a while, but I guess he must have just got onto Twitter. I don't know, but he's following me now. And also Engine House Training, guys. So if you are on Twitter, go look those guys up and follow them as well. Tell them that I sent you over there and sort of spread the love, and maybe we'll get them engaged here as well on EMS Office Hours. So, all right, guys, that's it. Josh, thanks for joining. I appreciate it. We'll see you next week.
Always a pleasure.
All right, everybody, that's it. Again, anyone have any comments, concerns, you want to talk about a specific topic here on the show, be sure to send it over to me. My email is admin@emsseo.com. I'll be sure to maybe we'll start a show based on a comment or a suggestion you have. So, all right, guys, that's it. And as always, stay safe, and we'll see you next week.